Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
And hello. Welcome to the princes that were promised. This is Sean, and I'm here with John, but John is out there in Nassau County. We're doing it via Skype this week. John, how's it going, man? What are we doing today?
Well, we gotta do the season 5 characters.
Yeah, we gotta do season 5 characters, yeah.
I wanted to start off like I normally start off, with a little bit of a rant about stupid theories. This one just, another one that just takes the cake. When you think it's heard enough, you know, we heard it all, you hear other things, and you know what, I just gotta press the dislike button on the YouTube channel, dislike, and you know, I don't want to comment, because it's just, something that's not worth it. It's definitely not worth it.
Can I ask you something, John, about, do you find you always hit the like or dislike button?
Not all the time, no.
What about if it's Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire related?
If it's a theory that I really, really think it's like well thought out and good, I'll like it.
Okay.
If it's something I definitely don't like or dislike and think it's completely stupid, I'll dislike it. My biggest problem is this. Like, when you go to the comment section, when you see all the idiots on the comment section.
Right.
They get likes for their comments. But if you dislike them, it doesn't really show up as a negative to them.
Oh.
Like, you can just dislike, it doesn't really discount their comment or something.
Okay.
How stupid it is.
Yeah.
But anyways, this video is about Rhaegar Lyanna. And of course, you know, I consider myself a Rhaegar Lyanna.
You are an expert on the subject.
Right. And basically, you know, long story short, his whole entire theory was that Rhaegar showed Lyanna the future through the Lord of Light. What was going to happen? Meaning, you know, Lyanna would know that Brandon would die, that her father Rickard would die, all these people will die, this big war will die, she will die, he will die.
Okay.
Just to get her to go with and complete this prophecy. I completely think it's so dumb that I just don't think Lyanna, you know, people are just trying so hard to discount the idea and the, basically at this point, the almost formality that it was a love story. And it wasn't like Lyanna was not being there to just fulfill a prophecy, not being there against her will or any cause. They don't want to hold on to that at all. They're defining something or anything to discount that. And I just don't think Lyanna would look into this flames and be like, oh, my brother Bran's going to die. It's okay. It's
yeah,
okay.
I have a comment for that, but I can't come up with a reason. Why would somebody try to prove that Lyanna was there for any reason other than love?
It's another stem of a flower of the people who just discredit RLJ to go, okay, well, I'll accept RLJ, but it wasn't, you know, it was, it, basically what it comes down to, I think, is this. This is, I thought about this, that George R. R. Martin, in his own little world where he has gone against tropes, where he has killed Eddard Stark in the first book, where he has killed the son off without getting revenge, where he has killed the killer of the father, by no means of Starks.
Right.
They follow this tooth and blood that nothing is too obvious. That it's too obvious it's not going to happen.
Okay.
And they go leaps and bounds because George R. Martin has laid the book of the groundwork for. But some stuff is just, at this point, it's just like, it's like face reality.
Deal with it, dude. It's not that big a deal.
Did you catch the Brian Silk tweet, text message a few an hour or so ago?
When he told us who was Azor Ahai is. Yeah.
I think it's because I made a comment on a page on this Azor Ahai theory that she was Azor Ahai, which is so dumb because these pages just want to get hits.
No.
Like, this theory's been around for a couple of years now, and they're trying to make it a brand new theory no one came up with.
Dude, I bet you it has to do with that shot of Jamie from the trailer. I bet you it's a Game of Thrones theory now.
It has a lot to do with the bat scene in season 3. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't know, whatever. Although I still do believe it, Azor Ahai is not Jon Snow, it is Jaime Lannister and not Dany. Dany's definitely not Azor Ahai.
Well, Dany's definitely the red herring.
Yeah.
If you want to say Jon Snow is a backup red herring, then yeah, I would go Jaime also. Jaime. But
that's the George R. R. Martin like twist, though.
Yeah.
But that would also include if you think Bran's on the side against the others, then you're feeling that Jaime and Bran are playing on the same side when they still have that conflict resolution to fight you to go against. Really,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They need Toby.
They need a win-win.
They need a win. Westeros needs to win, so they need a win-win-win. Otherwise, it's the Night King.
Real quick before you go on, this is a spoiler for season 7, about the trailer.
Spoiler alert for season 7. Wait, definite spoiler or possible spoiler?
It's possible.
Possible.
There is a shot of a dragon, one of Danny's dragons, in the trailer. It's a POV show where you're looking right at the dragon's teeth and all that. If you look at it, the dragon's definitely on Dragonstone. So it's not up north. It's not in King's Landing. You can definitely see it's in Dragonstone. And I think a lot of people thought that this dragon was Drogon. But if you look closer, the skin is greener in color. The dragon's Rhaegal. Yeah. And I'm willing to bet that this is the scene where Dany shows Rhaegal to Jon. And Rhaegal's going to have a connection with Jon. He's not going to, he's going to act like, the same way the dragons acted to Tyrion,
Now, the dragon that both those dragons acted that way to Tyrion, it was, if I remember correctly, it was one in particular, right? What was it?
It was one in particular. It was Viserion.
It was Viserion, okay.
Jon's going to ride Rhaegal. It's a guarantee. Jon's going to ride the dragon that was named after Rhaegar.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Especially the fact, because, spoiler alert, if you haven't read the leaks, that Viserion is going to be the dragon that's going to get shot down by the Night's King and be turned into a wooded dragon.
Right.
Rhaegal's not going to be of it. Rhaegal's not going to come with them to the fight in the north, because Rhaegal's going to get injured earlier in the season. Dany's only going to take Drogon and Viserion up north.
Okay.
Episode 6.
You thinking Euron's going to hurt? Euron's going to injure Rhaegal?
No, the plot leak has it that Qyburn comes up with a spear that can kill a dragon, and what it does is they're able to throw upon Rhaegal's wing and injures him. Doesn't kill him, but injures him. So when she goes up north, she just takes Drogon and Viserion.
Okay.
And this is a scene where basically Davos writes to Dany that Jon will give up his kingship if you come fight the war with him. I just don't want to see Jon bending the knee to Dany. I will throw my swords out the window if I see him bend the knee to Dany. I just will not take it. He does not bend the knee to Dany. He does not bend the knee to no one, let alone someone who does not have a claim over him.
Would you be okay with him bending the knee if everyone ends up bending the knee to him later on? Or just, you like Stannis on this subject?
I want Stannis on the subject, although I think like next year, like, well, 2 years from now, it seems when there's going to be like, I don't know, like how are they going to do it? What is Samuel going to be carrying Bran in the wheelchair, and they're going to be carrying like a noodle blade in their hand, kind of like in the Goonies, Howlin' Reed's going to come out of the blue and all of a sudden be like,
it's me, Howlin' Reed.
No, you did not bend the knee. Oh, and by the way, I want to say something. I believe we go back on our last year's season reviews. I think I said after the episode where we see Benjamin Hands come to Bran and Mira's rescue, I believe I was one of the first people that said that there was a sword there that was in a picture. And I believe that I said it was Dark Sister. And now everyone's getting on the Dark Sister thing, that is Dark Sister. There's a sword there that comes out, just out of the blue, that's just there.
In which scene?
Gets saved by Benjen. There's a sword on the shot itself. In Treestop, you see a sword there. I'm guaranteeing that's Dark. I said it last year.
The scene when Benjen leaves them?
Before that. Sees like episode 5 or 6.
Okay.
You see a sword there. And now everyone's going on with the theory that, you know, that's Dark Sister, which I agree with. And I think I said it last year that it was Dark Sister. That they were going to, that was their way of introducing Dark Sister and will come to fruition. And I do believe that Dark Sister will go to Arya Stark.
How does Dark Sister get north if the Three-Eyed Crow is...
It's in his cave.
Is just a Three-Eyed Crow and not actually Brynden Rivers.
Well, they're still taking elements of Blood Raven, still in his cave.
Oh, man. I buy it. It's as good an explanation as any. I don't remember seeing that sword, though.
It has a picture of it. Maybe if I'll take it up, I'll...
Yeah.
See it.
Yeah, if you can. You know, definitely. And then maybe I can post it on the Facebook thing.
The pummel type is like a round pummel, like a circular, like cylinder type. You know, it looks very feminine. It does not look
Okay.
It looks like a feminine sword, which Dark Sister was. A thin blade. Thinner blade than our normal sword.
So then where is Blackfyre?
I don't know. Well, I know where it is in the books, but I don't know where the show is.
Where in the books?
Oh, the books. It's definitely with Fagin. The Golden Company has it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We talked about that well over a year ago in
it's
our...
It's like them trying to prove that he's Aegon Targaryen, the son of Rhaegar and Elia, but at the same time, if anyone has any bit of sense, they'll realize the last person who had Blackfyre was... A Blackfyre. Like, yeah. This guy's fake.
Yeah. And the only reason the Blackfyres have it, because it was given to them by the guy that created the Blackfyres.
Exactly.
So, having a Blackfyre doesn't make you a Targaryen. Most likely makes you a Blackfyre. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. I guess that's it for spoilers. So, we didn't get to wrap up our discussion on the season 5 episodes, but I think we did cover everything we needed to cover with it. I don't think we get to talk as in depth as we normally did because we were pressed for time. As far as characters in season 5, the new ones that we're introduced to, there's really no one.
There's no one really. There's the Sand Snakes, I guess, right? There's the Sand Snakes.
The Sand Dorne. Snakes. The High Sparrow.
Yeah.
Dorne Martell. He was new for season 5.
Oh, obviously also Arya Hotel was also a new character.
Arya Hotav. I was very disappointed in Arya Hotav.
Yes. There's a girl at Hardhome. You know, she was introduced.
Right. But she didn't last very long.
Yeah.
His Darzo Lorak. Did we see him in season 4?
I forget. You know, I'm just trying to think of it. Who else was introduced?
Honestly, man, that may have been it. That really might have been it.
The Waits.
Yeah, of course. Fucking Terminator. That was you telling me the theory that...
Oh, there's a theory out there that the Waif actually killed Arya and took Arya's face on. I don't believe it. I don't buy into it.
No, because what the fuck is the point?
You know, just everything we've seen so far in the leagues. It would be a twist and a shock, but it just makes...
A twist and a shock for literally no reason. See, here's right. The thing with theories, folks. If you hear a theory and it makes you go, and makes you think for a minute and go, oh, that's kind of interesting... Yeah, maybe it's kind of interesting and enjoy it. Here's what you need to think first. Does it make any sense at all in terms of the story that you've been following for years now?
Why would the wave go? Why would her first kill as Arya Stark be against the Lord of Frey? Like, why would now she know that?
Right. Why would she go to Westeros at all? Like, wouldn't it just be like, all right, mission completed. Once Arya's down, let's proceed with some more Faceless Men business. So it's a pretty bad theory, man. I'm not into that.
You know, it's another theory, real quick, and it has things to retain to season 5. So it's not too far off. I'm seeing a lot more people like talking about the idea of will Bronn betray the Lannisters.
Yeah, you spoke on that a couple weeks ago. I think with the season 4.
More people have seen it. I hadn't seen the full. I saw it on YouTube. The time, I didn't see the video yet, but like. You know, he has a sail sword.
Yeah.
And I don't know to what end. I mean, what is he going to do? Like, going Euron's side or something at this point? Because what else is he going to do? Fight for the others?
Well, that's the thing. To what end? And the only situation where I could see it being plausible, especially for the character as we know him now, seemingly a Lannister man through and through, and it's not like the Lannister have skimped on paying him. Like, two Lannister brothers have taken pretty good care of him and value him. And he knows he's valued. And he knows the Lannisters are the richest, not only the richest house in the land, but really the house in the land. That's the ruling house of Westeros at this point. They have King's Landing. They have the Iron Throne. So why would he? I mean, if it's for personal benefit, what kind of situation would benefit him to betray the Queen of Westeros or her brother? Jobs don't get any better than the one he has. Interesting, but it just doesn't, it doesn't work.
Yeah, to think about it, it's only like to what end. As you say, yeah. As you always say, to what end does it do?
And it's easier to question these things now because there's so few episodes left, you know?
Yeah, we have like 4 seasons left, I can see. Okay, maybe it can come to something, but...
They have more story to tell. Like, not all the pieces are developed. Especially Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire, you look at the story like if you're playing a chess game and you have your opening moves. And then you have your middle game where you're developing your pieces and you're developing your attack. And then you have your end game where you're going in for the win or you are trying to defend their end game attack and survive. And that's where we're at now. Like all the pieces are developed. I don't think we're going to have any more huge developments in character. I think everybody that is still on the show, that's who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think anybody's going to swerve.
No changes. I mean,
right. When we talk about season 6, Winds of Winter, what makes that episode so perfect is that's kind of like the last swerve that we should really get because
the pieces are set now.
Yeah. That was like the last character development that I didn't really expect. Maybe we'll see Jon do some things that are un-Jon-like as his character develops a little bit more. Or Daenerys, Tyrion, Jaime, but not really. They pretty much are who they're going to be until the end of the series. End game. So any of these theories that are coming out are just, they're easier to disprove now. And the people hanging on to the anti R plus L equals J, they're hanging on by a thread, dude. Their only defense is George Martin hasn't written that R plus L equals J. At least he said he's going to, and somebody adapted that into a television show. Theories were cool, man. It was a cool thing to kill time waiting for season 2, waiting for season 3, after A Dance with Dragons came out. It was cool to read these theories and think about what will happen after A Dance with Dragons. Where's all this going? Season 5 characters, Sand Snakes, High Sparrow, Dorne Martell, Hisdar Zul Lorek, The Waif, Aerial Hota. John, who was most impressive to you of those new characters?
Really, no one.
Gun to your head. You got to pick one.
I'm not going to say it personally like, but for the story and where it goes, the High Sparrow.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to agree with you.
I don't like him.
No.
And that guy likes Cersei.
Well, you're not supposed to like the High. I don't think you're supposed to like the High Sparrow, but at least he was the most interesting of all these characters. Dorne Martell, Aerial Hotel were just straight up disappointing. Hisdar Zul Lorek, his book counterpart was never an interesting character to me. He's never somebody that I thought was ever once really on Dany's side. Although Game of Thrones kind of treated him like he was on Dany's side, like he had good intentions.
Right. Like I also know in the book, when I read him, I always thought he was up to no good.
Yeah.
A lot more than what the show possessed. And then the show just kills him off. Like when they kill off characters like him, it's kind of like the same thing when we talked about when they don't add characters like Fagin and John Conn.
Right.
In the end game, they have no end result. There's no end for them. It's for book stuff. But for their version of the story, there's no need for them. There's no need for Hisdor, Zor, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Who you would name as the status quo character?
Well, I guess it's got to be Cersei.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe not quite starting from episode 1, but with Tywin's death at the end of season 4, it's her role to take. I mean, unless you want to look at it the way that Tommen is the status quo, with Cersei and Margaery being protagonists and antagonists one way or another.
My protagonist and antagonist, I think, are the same as season 4, because I think it's just leading up to season 6 stuff.
Okay.
Jon and Ramsay are still, they're being laced upon as... I mean, I'm trying to think like who could be chaotic good. That's my big thing. Who's chaotic good in season 5?
Well, I don't.
I got someone.
Yeah, let's stick with the status quo and like the main conflict surrounding the status quo. Then, who do you think is the protagonist for the status quo? The character that
I always shit away the way you
Well, the way I look at it, it's just the way I look at it. I mean, you can look at it, you can interpret it any way you look.
It's more just the bona fide protagonist of the series, of the season.
Okay.
Now, if you want to go that way, I guess it's Marjorie, but I just want to consider her a protagonist.
You know what? I'm going to say Jamie. Even though Jamie goes all the way to Dorn, Jamie's the protagonist for season 5. He's going to Dorn to get Myrcella back. And the reason he's doing that is so that Cersei feels better.
I got him down as chaotic good.
Okay. So protagonist, you're going to stick with Jon?
Yeah, I'm sticking with that because that's where it's... Because Jon and Ramsay lead to season 6.
Okay.
Episode 9.
Yeah.
They're building that up. Even in that season, there's a scene in season 5 where Ramsay says something to Sansa, like, you know, bastards grow far in this world. Look at your half brother. He's the Lord Commander. Like, okay. They already set it up that they're going to come to a head.
Okay. So we're both saying Cersei for status quo. Protagonist, I'm saying Jaime Lannister. You're saying Jon Snow. Mm-hmm. Antagonist.
I'm saying Ramsay Snow.
You're saying Ramsay Snow. I'm going to say for an antagonist to status quo character, I'm going to say Marjorie Tyrell. You're interpreting it as the antagonist for season 5, the main storyline, Ramsay Snow.
He rapes Sansa.
Yeah, no doubt. I could easily go that way. I'm going to stick with Marjorie, though, just for the sake of discussion, because I think that if Cersei represents the status quo Westeros in everything she's doing, Marjorie is trying to change that. Even though it seems like Cersei is more aggressive about it, and she definitely is, Marjorie is trying to supplant Cersei. So chaotic good, you put Jaime Lannister. And what was you thinking with that?
Well, as you say, he's trying to get his daughter back. Mm-hmm. He's going into lands where if he gets caught, could possibly turn into a war.
Okay.
So there's like a lot of chaos out of that. And turns out there is some chaos out of that.
Yeah.
Definitely short-lived, though. Like, definitely doesn't live up to what you thought it was going to be. Like, you thought maybe there was going to be a full-on Lannister Martell war in season 5, but it just never happened. But at the same time, what Jaime's doing is just chaotic. To actually go there with him and Ron to get Marcella back. And it ends in death anyways.
Okay. I think for chaotic good, I kind of want to go with Brienne, but I think I did her for season 4.
But she's really too much in season 5.
No, she doesn't. She just kind of sits around.
Until it's being like, she goes away, and then all of a sudden the White Count goes on, like, go.
However, she does kill Stannis. The child-killing Stannis, baby-killer Stannis, who is the only king left from the War of the Five Kings. I'm going to go with Brienne of Tarth for chaotic good, for that one act, for killing Stannis. With that, you could make the argument that, why not name Ramsay Snow chaotic good? Because there's nothing good about that dude. Brienne's sword that kills Stannis, ends his campaign to become the king of Westeros.
Usurper.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Brienne of Tarth. And then for chaotic evil, I'm going to say Ramsay Snow. Now Bolton, as far as the story goes.
I'm going to go with the High Sparrow.
That's a good one. That is a good one. That is a very good one. The oncoming threat that the status quo is preparing for or knows they need to be prepared for, I'm going to say that is Tyrion Lannister. Because while Cersei may not have much of an idea of what Daenerys Targaryen is up to, she knows that Tyrion is out there, and she knows that Tyrion's the kind of guy, at least in her mind, she made him out to be this unbelievably evil, kinslaying free. She must be thinking that he will come back to finish the job, and that he is the Voluncar. So I would think that if Cersei's the status quo, then Tyrion is the oncoming threat to the status quo. Kinslaying individual. Now that he got himself...
I'm going to say House Tyrell.
Okay. All right. I could dig it.
Whether you want to say Marjorie or maybe Alina, if you wanted to bring it down to more to individuals in itself, I'm going to say Marjorie Tyrell and or Alina Tyrell.
Well, who's the real mastermind of House Tyrell? We know it's not a dude. That's for sure.
Oh, man.
There's one thing we know. It's not a guy. They're just fucking morons.
I'm going to see Alina.
Yeah. Alina trying to teach Marjorie, and fortunately now she has no heirs whatsoever. The existential threat, the threat that nobody knows about, even the threat itself, to the status quo. I'm going to go with Jon Snow again. Although part of me wants to say the Night's King the White Walkers, especially after the Hard Home episode. Part of me wants to put them in that position. I'm going to leave it as Jon Snow, because Jon Snow is still Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He is, until the closing moments of Season 5, he's the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He's fighting the good fight for the realm, obviously, at the Wall, but he's also threatening the realm, because we know who he is. We know that he has a very good claim to the Iron Throne that he doesn't know about, but also the battle that he's fighting up at the Wall, the evil that he's preparing to fight against, could wipe out Westeros. And if he handles that poorly, it will wipe out Westeros. So that's why I consider Jon Snow the existential threat. Same time, naming him the protagonist of the season, I can completely get behind that. I could go both ways on it. But I'm going to go this way, and that's my case. Status quo character is Cersei's antagonist, Jaime Lannister. The antagonist is Margaery Tyrell. The character of Chaotic Good is Brienne of Tarth. The character of Chaotic Evil is Ramsay Bolton. The oncoming threat for the status quo is Tyrion Lannister, and the existential threat, Jon Snow. And you have your status quo is Cersei, your protagonist is Jon Snow, your antagonist is Ramsay Snow, your chaotic good is
Jaime Lannister.
Your chaotic evil is the Tyrells?
No. High Sparrow,
right. That's a good one, dude. And then your threat is the Tyrells. Who do you put as the unknown threat?
White Walkers.
That's a good call too, man. That's a good list. I could go either way on all of these. Alright, so then that just leaves the questions, man. Who do you think gave the best performances in Season 5? Which actors?
Theon's up there again, I think.
Yeah.
I want to say a bad season for Jaime and Tyrion, but it wasn't their best.
Although Tyrion had a couple of really good episodes.
Right. In this season, I think it was actually a season where, I think Kit Harington was starting to really get really good at the role of Jon Snow.
Plus, he had all of the audience behind him. Whereas in the past, the audience was behind him, but they weren't sure which way to focus their Stark loyalties. Bran, Rob, Jon. When we covered Season 4, that was really the breakout year for Jon Snow. But Season 5 cemented that. His death at the end of Season 5, it wasn't nearly the holy shit moment that we've had in previous seasons.
No, I think a lot of people just knew about it. Everyone really kind of at that point.
You think a lot of people were spoiled to it?
Yeah. I mean, it was funny. One funny thing was I was telling Michelle, all week, oh my God, this is going to be another great episode of the season finale, blah, 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 blah. And I remember coming out of work, and I didn't see it, but I knew the episode was over. So I'm like, what did you think? She's like, that was horrible. I can't believe you like that. Especially you. I think I use the George R. Martin line, that he said, well, do you think he's dead? Do you really think
right.
he's dead?
That was probably your line all week. Fucking the entire year until season 6 came out.
It's funny. I was talking with my dairy manager at work, and he's a Game of Thrones fan, it turns out, and he's telling me about it. It's like, yeah, well, season 5, I thought, John was dead. I'm like, you read the books, and you watched the show, and you really thought John was dead. Oh, my God. I don't know. To me, it was just so obvious that he was going to come back. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the same for me. When I read it, it just didn't click or register that Jon Snow was dead. Like, I just didn't believe it. It didn't feel right. Even with all the twists and turns of a George R. R. Martin story in the series, it didn't feel right that Jon Snow was dead. You got the feel of the story. You got how the ups and downs and the twists and the turns. You got a better feel for it by the time you read A Dance with Dragons. No matter what he wrote, Jon Snow could have been pulled by four horses in different directions, his body just split apart. I don't know if I would have bought that he was dead. Because it didn't make sense. It kind of goes with our argument against Episode 7. Yeah, Episode 7 is great. But just the existence of Episode 7 cheapens Episode 4, 5, and 6. You kill Jon Snow in The Dance with Dragons, you really kill him. You cheapen Ned's death. You cheapen you cheapen the Red Wedding. And you cheapen fucking everything that I've read. You make it pointless to have read it. And it was pointless for you to write it. the mystery about his mother. Why he's the only Stark left alive that can legitimately do anything about anything. Even though he's a quote-unquote bastard, why are you killing him? So he couldn't be dead. Nobody's that stupid to kill him. If he killed Jon Snow off at the end of Dance of Dragons, killing off Ned is daring. Killing off Robb and Catelyn at the Red Wedding is bold. Killing off Jon Snow is stupid. I guess that's the best way I can say it. So it never felt like he was dead. And on screen, it was the way he's killed, quote-unquote killed, in A Dance of Dragons is a lot more exciting. There's a lot more tension, especially the last thing he thinks, stick him with the pointy end. But it works in Mother's Mercy. And it's the same idea. He alienated himself at the Wall, except in A Dance of Dragons, he sends away his closest men. He sends them away to open up new towers, to help his plan come to fruition of allowing the wildlings to cross the Wall and to settle the new gift as a means of protecting the realm against a real threat. That thinking was just too radical for the older guys in the Night's Watch, the guys that were already at the management level, the upper management level of the Night's Watch. But all of his loyal guys, he sent them out to do what needed to be done, so he didn't have those guys around to protect him. And that's well written, and it's great that you can kind of see where he made these mistakes in leadership, even though his ideas as a leader and the things he wanted to lead the Night's Watch to do had extreme foresight to them. He didn't think about protecting himself. He didn't think that anybody would hurt him. He thought everybody would just follow suit.
No, they're not going to kill two Lord Commanders in a row.
Right, because I'm sure that's never happened of the fucking, 990 whatever Lord Commanders that there's been. I'm sure two have never been murdered back to back. It's impossible. They're all fucking murdered. How many fucking Lord Commanders probably die in their sleep? I'm sure very few. I'm sure they most, mostly die like some accident, or they get sick, or they get stabbed. The Night's Watch has become rapists and murderers, and it's been that way for a long time. You're going to trust these guys? Or, the upper management guys that have been there for a lot more years than Jon Snow's been alive, they're going to let some kid who's, even though he's a bastard, he's noble born, castle raised, just come in and start fucking allowing the wildlings through the Wall? Wildlings that have killed their friends? Lots of their friends? Wildlings who they've spent most of their lives being told to kill. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much been the job of the Night's Watch in modern times, as far as the Song of Ice and Fire timeline. The Night's Watch's job has been to keep wildlings on their side of the Wall. He's asking these guys to take a giant leap of faith that they're not going to take. So in their mind, they're justified in doing what they're doing. And I think it was portrayed well in Game of Thrones. I think it's portrayed perfectly in A Song of Ice and Fire. But either way, I didn't buy that Jon Snow was dead. It's like two different things. It's like the storyline of the Night's Watch and this new leadership and the changes it wants to initiate. And then the character of Jon Snow as relates to House Stark and the Iron Throne. One's perfectly believable and the other is something that we want resolved and we know we're going to get resolution from. We don't believe that he's dead. And if he is, we're going to be fucking pissed off to not find out any of those answers. Initially, when it first happened, what were your thoughts on Stannis for season 5?
When they went, you can tell me when he killed his daughter?
Yeah, when he burned Shireen, when he makes that decision.
He was upset. Like, I didn't think it would happen. I didn't think that would be like a true event. But I just gotta go with what you've said. Like, they said that George said it was gonna happen this way. This is one of George's three twists. They've gone two. The last twist is coming away at the end of the series. I just can't imagine they'd say they just make that up so they couldn't get him. Like, we'll just blame it on George. Blame it on the fact that I can't write a book.
He'll never write anything to disprove us.
Yeah. they're placing the odds on it. How many pages do you have left, George? Just about another 700 unedited pages.
I don't even count anymore. Start typing, and I get distracted, and then next thing I know, I gotta go to my movie theater, or New York City.
Because my friend calls me up and wants me to write another chapter.
The status thing was a huge disappointment for me when Season 5 aired. I'll speak more to this when we start talking about Season 6, but I thought that Game of Thrones ruined George Martin's story. I don't think that's the case anymore. Yeah, I think George R. R. Martin ruined George R. R. Martin's story. But I also think that Benioff and Weiss could have made a better TV show the whole time. And I'm not saying Game of Thrones is bad. Obviously, I'm not. I love Game of Thrones. I can't wait for Game of Thrones to come back. We just went through 5 seasons where I ranked every episode and we combed through it. But I think the majority would have been even better if they didn't have to follow any of these books and they just had these main plot points to hit, because when they had freedom from George Martin's material is when they do their best work. Would you agree with that?
There's no expectation that they had to do a character a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, there's no he's like this in the book, so that's how we have to write him.
We know George Martin wrote an episode for season 1, 2, 3, 4. We know he's on as executive producer. We know that he counsels them. If they have a question, he answers it about the character. I don't think he has to, necessarily, if he's already given them the information. But I've read that George Martin was a lot more involved with the television show, the seasons he wrote. Season 5 and 6, he was a lot more hands-off. Season 6, basically non-existent for the production side of Game of Thrones. He said he wasn't going to write any more episodes. He wanted to finish his books. Not that that was a divorce in their creative relationship. I think it was just like, all right, George, we got it. We got it from here. And George seeing that they were going to eclipse his material. I think them parting ways and Benioff and Weiss adapting the material without his help, I think they do a better job with it. And Martin is just, I think having him around, however involved he was in the production of Game of Thrones, I think they felt a need to...
Obligated.
Yeah, exactly. Obligated to stick closer to the source material as far as timelines and major events of whatever book they were adapting for whatever season. Season 4 and 5 are their head and shoulders above Season 2 and 3. And Season 5, when it originally aired, I was just so angry, but I wasn't angry at the show, and I didn't dislike the show, especially The Dance of Dragons, Hardhome, Mother's Mercy. We talked about this when we went through the episodes, that 1-2-3 punch.
Extremely good.
Unbelievable, dude. I think that they would have been better off the entire time if they just, you know, had trusted them. They had trusted themselves and not tried to, it almost feels like they were trying to cater to the source material instead of doing a good adaptation of it. I don't know. I mean, that's just how I take it. It's like with season 4, Game of Thrones becomes a real TV show. Whereas going up to it, it's just a show trying to make sure it squeezes all the stuff in and wait around for Blackwater or wait around for Reigns of Castamere.
Right.
As far as best performance for season 5, I might agree with you, Kit Harington. Cersei was amazing. And she gets
I just find that I think this is like, you can say it was definitely her, she really started to.
Yeah, like if season 4 was breakout for Kit Harington, Jon Snow, season 5 is breakout for Lena Headey, Cersei Lannister. And season 6, she just kind of, you know, nails it down.
Right.
You got anything else as far as season 5 characters or otherwise?
Not really, no. Again, there's not a lot of new characters, so we know the characters already. You know, yeah. There isn't a whole bunch of new ones you can really. Yeah, definitely not a lot of great new characters either.
No great new characters. Just kind of some minor guys that really just serve as pushing the plot forward. You know, season 5 is really the end of the second act. The end of setting up what the conflict will be. Season 6 is like the beginning of the third act where...
Let me ask you a question now real quick. Well, I guess, again, they did it off with Hardhome, so it's really kind of a scopey question. obviously it's the end of the second act, the beginning of the third and final act.
Right.
They introduce, once again, the threat of Westeros being the Wild Workers, and I guess they did with the Hardhome episode.
Yeah. I mean, it's tricky because, you know, you gotta keep in mind that the final conflict is the White Walkers and the people of Westeros. But then you look at season 7 coming up and it's like, are we going to get White Walkers versus Westeros legit in season 7? Or just kind of like opening skirmishes? You know,
skirmishes, I think.
That's the way the leaks sound, and that's kind of the way it's looking from the trailers. Even though we know that's the main conflict, then we've had season 6, season 7, where it's been a build up to that battle. Winds of Winter, you could say that's really the end of the second act, and yeah, you can make that argument, but I feel like with the resurrection of Jon Snow, we'll speak more to this with season 6, but I feel like with the resurrection of Jon Snow, with Daenerys, her exile in the Dothraki Sea, doesn't seem like it's an end, but it is an end for the setting up of the conflict. Because in season 6, both those characters begin to emerge as their evolved character.
Right.
They don't change a whole lot, but they start to change into who they will be for this final conflict.
That's the world before they're going through their,
the hero journey, right?
I was going to say osmosis, but it's not osmosis. They're going through,
I was thinking of the Bilbo Baggins, hero journey or whatever from, folklore with,
Kevin Corsi?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I can't hear the word now. Not osmosis, I can't hear the word.
The chrysalis, like evolution.
Yeah.
Like a moth turning into a butterfly kind of thing. Like a
metamorphosis, I guess you can say.
Metamorphosis, that's a good one. Yeah. If you think about them, and maybe this conversation is better saved for season 6, but let's just finish it off now. If you think about Jon Snow, Daenerys, and even Tyrion to a certain degree, when you take Game of Thrones season 1, 2, 3, they are, particularly Jon and Daenerys, they are kids, and they are thrust into a situation where they have some semblance of control, but not much, especially in the first season. They get their bearings straight in the second season, and they have to sink or swim in the third season, right? You could kind of make that argument for them. And that's the first stage of their character development. And then the next stage, which is season 4, season 5, Feast for Crows, Dance of Dragons, they are now in a new position of leadership and they have a shaky time with it and they have to learn how to lead and how to compromise and how to be just and how to not be taken advantage of. Dany does a better job. Maybe Jon has better ideas. They both learn and they both fail and they both succeed. But in the end, Dany is literally chased out of her kingdom on the back of a dragon, and Jon is stabbed to death with another fucking mutiny.
The mutineers.
Yeah.
I hate that term. The mutineers.
Yeah. half the Night's Watch roster is mutineers.
The mutineers, better not.
But Jon Snow in death and Daenerys in her escape, they have to reflect and they have to go on like a spiritual journey, and they have to look at the job they did and what they did right and what they did wrong. And they come back to their role of leadership and they succeed. And then they take on a bigger role of leadership. Now they're headed for a meeting, which we'll see in season 7. Benioff and Weiss have done a great job showing that. Martin obviously wrote it with that intention.
Exactly. If anyone comes up and says, well, they're not really going to meet in the books, you know what? Stop watching the show.
Yeah, like, what books are you reading? And have you ever read a book before or watched anything before? Why would you think they wouldn't meet? It's like Rocky 1, where fucking Rocky's preparing for this opportunity the entire time. And he goes down to the ring, and then Apollo's about to go down to the ring, and like he gets like fucking kidnapped by terrorists or something. That's how the movie ends. Trolls, dude. They're trolls. They're fucking trolls, man. It's stupid. It's stupid because like it doesn't even make me angry that they have these thoughts. It makes me angry that it's like they're just like vomiting stuff out of their mouth just so people pay attention to them. That's the development of the story. And how is it going to end? I mean, we have a good idea. We don't know exactly, but that's the journey that these characters are on. And it's likely that only one of them will succeed. The other one will probably fail. Or maybe they help each other succeed and they get married and live happily ever after, like some people think. We'll find out. But, you know, that's kind of how I measure the acts in A Song of Ice and Fire. And you can use it for Game of Thrones too, is where Jon and Daenerys are in their journey. Narratives, in their character journey. Yeah. Who else can you imagine? I mean, Tyrion maybe, but who else? Sansa? Dude, fucking Sansa between season 3 and 4 got married twice, raped, fucking, she's up and down.
And she's still technically married to Tyrion.
Yeah, dude. Well, who knows? Somebody can make a case that Sansa's going through a hero journey too. Anyway, I think that's good on season 5. As always, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Sorry this episode came out late. I was definitely under the weather. But we'll be back at you with our season 6 coverage, our preview for series 7. And dude, we are like really close to season 7. I'm fucking psyched.
So 18 days.
18 days, baby. Thank you for listening. We'll talk with you soon. Bum, 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 bum.